The following presentation is part of the Beyond the Blast Doors network. You're listening to Around the Galaxy.
This is Pete Fletzer. On this episode of Around the Galaxy, we're talking to Ash Crossan from Entertainment Tonight. Join us as we talk about her Star Wars journey, life as an entertainment reporter, and some of her favorite Star Wars memories. So strap yourselves in, relax, and enjoy this journey around the galaxy. Well, welcome to episode number 103 of Around the Galaxy, the Star Wars fan talk show. I'm your host, Pete Fletzer. Thank you so much for checking us out. If you're new to the show, if this is your first visit, well, welcome aboard. We're so excited to have you, and we have a very special guest for you tonight. If you're a return visitor, well, thank you so much for coming back. You know the drill. Follow us on Twitter at ATGCast. Check out our website at beyondtheblastdoors.com. And hey, if you're into that Patreon thing and you want to support the show, feel free to head over to patreon.com/beyondtheblastdoors. We are the only network, the only content network that has five live Star Wars shows each night of the week. We have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We got Monday Holochronicles, where you're talking toys and collectibles. Tuesdays, you get in-depth interviews and perspectives on Star Wars on Around the Galaxy. On Wednesdays, you get our new show, which is BTBD Live with, you got David, you got Arzu, you got Scotty. On Thursday, you got the Bombad Cast with Scotty and Jerry doing who knows what week to week. And of course, on Fridays, you have our live call-in show. And this Friday is trivia night, so make sure to tune in with your opportunity to call in and win some fine, exciting prizes. Well, this week's episode, we are really excited because we are going to be bringing you an interview with somebody who is a content producer and host on the longest running entertainment television show in history, Entertainment Tonight. She has been with them since about 2012 and interviewed everybody from Jim Carrey, Joaquin Phoenix, even the winners of Love Island. But most importantly, and what you are probably tuning in for, is the fact that she has become essentially their go-to person for all things Star Wars. Name a Star Wars actor, personality, director, writer. She's probably spoken to them. And tonight, we're going to speak to her. So tonight, Around the Galaxy is excited to bring Ash Crossan. Ash, thanks so much for joining us tonight. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm great. I'm loving this intro. I got like a graphic.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we go all out here on Around the Galaxy.
I feel honored. The carpet has been rolled out.
Well, you know, I grew up watching Entertainment Tonight. I was just talking to my wife before I came out. I was like, I remember 7:30 on the weeknight, we'd watch Entertainment Tonight, and then like, I don't know, Muppet Show would come on after, but we all hummed it our whole life. Were you a fan of Entertainment Tonight as a child growing up?
Yeah. So especially when I was in like college, I wanted to be like an entertainment reporter, like a Juliana Rancic. But the appeal for me with ET specifically is they were always like on set of everything. They always had like the trailers. They were always like the first ones to tell you about the movies. So yeah, I work there. It's weird.
that's so how did you get there? Tell me a little bit about your story from dreaming about being Harriet Rancic to being there today. What was the path?
Yeah, so I went to college at East Carolina University, go Pirates. and I studied journalism there. And after college, I moved home. I'm from Delaware, and I lived with a couple of my friends, and we kind of lived there for a year, kind of figuring out what we were going to do after college, what the next step was going to look like. And I knew that I had to live in basically New York or LA if I wanted to be in this field. But I didn't want to move there by myself. I mean, I probably would have, but I was thinking more on the New York track. And then one of my friends was like, hey, I want to be an actor. I don't know what I want to do, but I think I'm going to move to LA at the end of this summer. I was like, oh, I'll go with you. And he was like, really? I was like, yeah, what? Like, I have nothing to do here. What am I going to do here in Delaware? I like continue to work at Nordstrom. I was working at Nordstrom in the shoe department. So I was like, let's do it. So we threw all of our stuff that we had in the car, anything we could fit, and just started driving west, got an apartment like on the way. We're just like calling landlords on the way. and I moved to an apartment in Studio City. And we, you know, my friends started going to like acting classes, and I started applying for every PA job I could possibly find. And it's very hard when you don't really know anyone that's out here. Like, how do you get your foot in the door? What do? Who do you talk to? So I was applying for stuff on like, I don't even know if Indeed existed back then, but whatever like the job websites were back then, I was going on there. And then I got a little desperate because it got to be like 3 or 4 months in, and I was like, oh no, money's running out. What are we gonna do? I called Nordstrom and they said, we don't want you to transfer to this one. And I was like, oh no,
oh no.
What am I gonna do? So I went on this website called entertainmentcareers.net, which sounded very sketchy, and you had to like pay for it. It was like $20 a month or something. And I applied for a job that said anonymous PA night shift. And I was applying for everything. Right. So in my head, I go, that is like that's like a porn place or something. Like, it's like an adult film company. Like, why is it so like shady? I don't know. And I got a call from this lady who was like, hi, I'm from Entertainment Tonight, and I would like to interview for you for this position. And I was like, no way. Wow. And I was still like, this feels like a sham. I don't know. So they were like, okay, our studio is like right here. It turned out it was like a block from where I was living in LA, which is unheard of, because usually everything is, you know, 45-minute trek from wherever you ended up living.
Sure.
So it was like right down the street, like rode my bike down there. And I got this vibe while I was talking to her. We just got along really well. And I was like, I think I got this job, but I don't know. Like, she said there was like 200 applicants. I was like, there's just no way. I don't know anyone. And usually it's like, you know, the friend of the friend of the friend gets the gig or whatever. Mm. Then I got a call like 2 weeks later. She was like, yep, you got it. So I was logging tapes in the middle of the night in the dark. In what we called the tape vault, because E.T. has been around since 1982. So we have billions of tapes of just like unlogged footage that we need to, that needed to be like digitized and transcribed and all that stuff. And that was my job for like a year. And then after that, I became an assistant to this senior producer, a woman named Bonnie Teagle, who was very like well-known and respected in the industry. She actually passed away a couple years ago, but I was her assistant. And that was like industry boot camp. That was like, she kicked my ass. I love her so much, but she kicked my ass, and it was the hardest job ever. And I remember like a couple, like I was about a year into that job, and I was like, you know, crying once a week. I was like, what am I going to do? Like, this is like, what am I going to do next? And our online department was like pretty bare bones at that point. It wasn't, you know, we had a website, but it wasn't what it is today at all. And I remember being like, oh, could I write a couple of times a week for the website? I think it'd be like something that I could do that could feel like my own, you know, instead of being somebody's assistant. Mm. And I'm like, sure. So I used to do all of these kind of like articles and slideshows that were very like 12 actors you never knew were in Are You Afraid of the Dark? Like those kinds of articles. But I was always like talking to the people in the office about Star Wars, biggest Star Wars fan. And around this time was 2012. This was when they announced...
Yep.
The Disney thing, The Force Awakens, like all of that was kind of coming to fruition. I think they announced the Disney deal in like 2012.
Yep.
And I remember it was like they announced The Force Awakens, and one of my friends from online came to me and he was like, listen, I think this would be a good article for your first article you'll write about Star Wars. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I wrote this, you can find it. It's a very poorly written article announcing The Force Awakens, because it was like that clapperboard picture that J.J. Abrams posted on Instagram had like the sand on it. We were all speculating that we were going back to Tatooine.
Sure. Yep.
And that was my first article. It is my mom framed it, and it's in our house, my mom's house. So funny. And then, you know, it just kind of kept going from there. Like I got like, you know, how it goes. You get a little more trust to do a little more things. So I started, you know, by happenstance would go out and do some press junkets and things like that. And they were like, oh, that was actually pretty good. Like, you should keep doing that. Okay. Okay. That went well. Keep doing this. Okay. We'll give you a little more. We'll give you a little more. And I feel like before I knew it, I was like on camera doing interviews. It was kind of whirlwindy. But
so who was your first on camera interview?
I'm trying to think of who it was. Because I used to get so freaking nervous. I have a couple of people that were like really in the beginning. Like, do you know who Keenan Lonsdale is? He was in Love, Simon, and he was in The Flash.
Okay, yeah.
I think adorable guy. Yeah. Him and I kind of, I feel like we always were kind of like, whenever I see him, we're like, oh, we like came up together. Cause he was one of my early, early interviews. And then I remember Austin St. Johnny's The Red Ranger was also one of my very, very early interviews. Sometimes I see people and it'll like click in my head. I'm like, oh my gosh. And I want to interview them again because I'm so much better now.
Yeah, it's funny. I feel kind of, sometimes I feel the same way with this show. I'm like, oh, I spoke to Jason Fry, but I was only, you know, I was only doing this like a couple months at the time. I want to go back and do it all over again. So you definitely have some of those sort of things. So, and so you were like sort of the, you were kind of throwing your Star Wars, you know, your Star Wars pride out real early on, I suppose. And you ended up, you did the, that article that you mentioned. What, let's maybe take a half step back and talk about growing up with Star Wars. Were you a Star Wars fan growing? Obviously, I'm going to guess you were, or maybe not. Maybe you discovered it later. When did, what role did Star Wars play in your life early on?
Yeah, so I remember it was, 97 when they re-released the special editions in theaters. And I was, how old was I? I don't know, like, like eight. I think it was like eight. Okay. And my dad was like, we're going to go see this movie. And I was like, okay, I did not want to go. I remember this. I didn't want to go. I was like, I want to go to my dad, go with my dad to see some space movie. You know, so he took me and I remember we sat in the front. It was the Movies 10 in Delaware. Your feet stick to the floor. I had to sit in the front because it was back when the movie theaters all had like the flat seats. So you had, if you're a kid, you have to sit in the front row. Otherwise, you're not going to see a thing. Right. And so, yeah, I'm sitting in the front row and I just remember being so captivated by Princess Leia. And I was like, oh, I want to be her. And I remember I was her for Halloween that year. And the rest was really history. That's just like,
this was like instant for you. You became
instant
fan.
It was instant.
That's wild. And so you had that sort of dark time. Did you sort of like disappear from Star Wars after, well, the prequels came out and then Star Wars kind of dissipated? Did you like keep up with any of the books? Did you keep up with any of that stuff? Or were you just like, were you so ingrained in Star Wars or so into it that you were like following all that stuff or no?
A little bit. So it was like, I saw New Hope in theaters. And by the way, this is embarrassing, but I didn't know a lot of that stuff like wasn't in the original movie. So for the longest time, there was stuff that I was just like, yeah, that's in it. Way too late in life. But so yeah, I remember seeing A New Hope really well, or Star Wars, or whatever you want to call it. But then I don't like particularly, I must have gone home. My dad was like, okay, now here's Empire, here's Return of the Jedi. And then 2 years later, prequels start rolling out.
Sure.
Yep. And I remember that was like all through high school, essentially. And then I remember reading a couple of like the, I think they were like YA Star Wars books. Yep. Mm-hmm. I have one. It was like Zorba the Hutt's Revenge or something. Mm-hmm. It was like one where Han and Leia get married and then the Hutts like interrupt and one of them has like long hair.
Classic. Good stuff.
That's
good
what I remember. Quality novel. Yeah. I had this period that a lot of us have where you love the prequels. When I saw them, I loved them. I thought they were so fun. And then I got a little bit older and I went off to college and I was like, I had that opposite of a renaissance, whatever that's called with the prequels, where I was like, I don't know if I like them. People are telling me I shouldn't like them. I don't think I like them. And then the Disney deal happened and I was like, oh, maybe I just like the original Star Wars movies and that's it. And that'll be it. So no, it's been a journey, but I feel like I didn't have like a ton of like dead space between no Star Wars, because when I did have it, I was okay with it. Cause I was in college. I'm partying, you know, I'm doing my thing.
Yeah, Star Wars is a little off to the side when you're having a little bit of fun in college.
Yeah,
exactly. So then of course Disney comes. And then, so you have, like I said, at the top, you have interviewed and spoken to just about everybody who people would want to speak to. Who was your first Star Wars interview on screen? On camera? Do you recall?
My first one. I mean, it must have been, it, I'm wondering if there's somebody I interviewed where I just brought up Star Wars, but I remember it had to have been John Boyega. Mm-hmm. Because hit, like, I feel like him and I, again, are one, are the, like, those people who are like, oh, we kind of came up at the same time. Because I remember interviewing him pretty early on, well before The Force Awakens came out. And we interviewed each other, or I interviewed each other. Well, I interviewed him like so many times leading up to The Force Awakens, but that by the time The Force Awakens came out, we were like, hey, what's going on? Yeah, exactly.
That's great.
I feel like it had to be him. Because I did, and then I did an awesome con panel with him where it was like an hour long conversation with him. Mm-hmm. So he was probably like he's probably the one I've interviewed like the most time overall.
So what's, you've interviewed all of the, what's one of your most memorable Star Wars events that you've been a part of or interviews, or maybe even not interviews, maybe you were at something that was, that stuck with you.
I mean, the most memorable has to be, I don't think there's anything quite like being at Star Wars Celebration Anaheim when that trailer, The Force Awakens trailer dropped, the Chewie were home moment. It was just, there was nothing like that. Because I think at that time I went and they weren't doing interviews at the time. They were kind of like holding back the cast at that time. I don't think they ended up doing interviews till D23. I could be completely misremembering this, but I'm pretty sure. So it wasn't until like, right up until the movie was coming out that we really started doing like interviews with that cast, like for the movie.
Right. Right. And so tell me about maybe one of the more interesting Star Wars interviews or one of the ones that really kind of sticks out to you is this something. This, I mean, you've had some recently with like Ewan McGregor and Judick. You've done panels for Mando and for Rise of Skywalker. What are some of the things that some oh wow moments, like oh my god, I'm doing this.
Yeah,
now kind of thing.
I think the biggest one had to be everything leading up to Mandalorian, because they asked me to do like the press conference, which I don't think is like out there. I don't know, but I did like a press conference with the cast, and it was like the first like panel that they did. And I had never like really done anything like that. And I was like, I was kind of nervous because it's different than doing it in front of like a fan audience. You're doing it in front of all of your press peers who are also there to like get a story. So you're like, I have to do a good job for everyone in this room because they're all counting on me. And so that, I remember that being like pretty nerve wracking, and it ended and we like kind of all went to do like a cast photo. And I went to the side. I was like, okay, you guys do your cast photo. And John Favreau looks at me and he's like, no, come over here. And I remember he put his arm around me and he's like, great job. And I was like, oh my God. Cause John Favreau to me is just, that's the guy, you know? And Dave Filoni. And Dave Filoni said very similar stuff to me, but John was the one that was standing right next to me. So I was just like, oh my gosh.
There he is.
That's also a very memorable one.
Oh, would you tell us about that one?
He was being honored as like a Disney legend. This was not Mando related.
Right.
And I was talking to him and I was like, oh, I have a Star Wars tattoo, by the way. I can't wait to talk to you about Mandalorian because there was like another carpet later. And I was like, I can't wait to talk to you about Mandalorian. And so I like showed him my tattoo and he was like, is that real? And I was like, yes, it's real. And he's like, did you get it for the show, for the panel today? And I was like, I think he thought it was like a temporary tattoo or something right. that I got specifically. And he was like, oh, you don't even know then. Because at the time we hadn't seen, like Cara Dune had like the rebel kind of tattoo. And he was like, oh, you don't even know. And he gave me one of his coins, one of his famous, you know, John Favreau coins that he makes for all his productions and hands out. So he gave me one. And I like knew it. He started reaching in his pocket. And I was like, are you going to give me a coin? He was like, yes, calm down.
So what I think that's one of the great things about watching your Star Wars interviews, because I feel like you come in there as a fan, like you knew that he carries around those coins and he gives them only to certain people. So like those kind of things you're already kind of, you're aware of and you're ready to go with. As a fan, does being a reporter of the, well, the franchise now. Does that change the way you look at the films from a fan perspective, or not even the films, or, well, not just the films, but the TV series, anything that you're covering? Does that change the way you enjoy the shows themselves?
It can a little bit, because if you have to like write it up or do an interview the next day or something, because I kind of like compartmentalize. Like, I'm like, okay, I'm in work mode. Like, I have two modes. I have work mode and play mode and like nothing in between. And so sometimes when I'm watching something, like, and I know I have to do an interview for it, I'm studying, I'm right, rewinding, I'm pausing, I have subtitles on, I'm looking for spellings, I'm not really like absorbing it the same way I would if I was just like sitting back on my couch with like a beer or whatever. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times in that case, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to watch this for work. And then tomorrow I will watch it again and enjoy it the right way. Or I'll try to do the opposite. I'll do like, okay, we're going to watch this. I'm going to hang out. I'm going to have a good time. I'm not even going to think about work. And then I'm going to go see it again and do it and do all my notes and whatever that I need to do.
Right. That must make it, it's nice that you can compartmentalize it. I mean, I think even like, there are times where, like, even myself, like as somebody who's been playing music my whole life, like, I either have to listen to the music for the music, like what's happening, or just let it kind of wash over you. So I imagine it's a very similar sort of thing. So what are you, again, back putting your fan hat on, mm-hmm, what are you looking forward to? What of all the 10 things from the Disney day that we had, it seems like forever ago, I guess it was 2 months. I don't know. I don't even know. I've lost track of time.
It was like December. Yeah.
I think it was December. There's 10 things coming out. There's the, you know, Book of Boba Fett, all these things. What are you kind of like the most excited about to see coming down the pike?
It's gotta be, I mean, it has to be the Obi-Wan show, right? Because we've been all wanting that for so long. I've been the annoying one that's like, every time I interview Ewan McGregor, being like, are you going to reprise Obi-Wan someday?
Yeah.
And then just on top of that, for them to just drop that they're going to bring Hayden Christensen back, which I don't think any of us ever thought he would ever do again.
Right.
I'm so excited for that.
Yeah, I find it so funny about Hayden because, you know, as you were saying, like, there was that time where, you know, Ken Napsok calls himself a reformed prequelist, right? And I kind of put myself in that same category. I saw him, I was at the New York premieres for all the prequels. And as a 7-year-old seeing Star Wars in the theater, the prequels kind of like, they were in there. So, you know, hey, I liked them. I didn't love them, you know, but now I've come back to them in a very different way. But I always recall everybody saying Hayden Christensen was very wooden and very whatever. And now when we hear he's coming back, we're all like, yeah, give me that. I'll take that. Right.
Yeah. Now. Yeah. Cause I mean, I don't know if you're like me, but Star Wars to me is like, you know, it's like your like kid brother or something where it's like you dunk on it because you love it so much. It's like, right. I'm always like, I don't know. It's just always like the kind of humor I've had where I've just made fun of things, even though I love it so much. And Star Wars can be an easy target. But with the prequels, like when you look at the behind the scenes of that, they are just in completely blue rooms, which is like blue objects. I don't blame like any kind of clunky moment that they had in any of those movies because that was so difficult.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. And it's interesting too, because without the prequels, without, you know, even Ahmed Best, who took so much abuse, without Ahmed Best, you don't get Lord of the Rings. You don't get Avengers. You don't get anything. Right. And he's, you know, that whole process was so, so amazing. And to your point, yeah, you're acting against blue screen. I mean, you're not going to get what you're getting from the volume. Right. Have you had a chance to be on set for any of the Mandalorian? Have you seen any of that stuff in person?
No, they're so lock and key about it. And I see why, like, especially the first season, they had, you know, probably a zillion baby Yoda puppets laying around that they didn't want anyone to see. But yeah, they're very lock and key about all Star Wars sets.
Yeah. Now, how does it work? Do you have to hunt them down and be like, hey, I'm sniffing out this story? Or are you, because it's Entertainment Tonight, do they come to you and say, hey, we're looking to promote this. Would you be interested in doing this? And it might also be the type of reporter that you've become for Entertainment Tonight. But how does that process work for you?
Yeah. For me, usually somebody has to have a project to promote, right? Like they don't want to give up their time and I don't blame them. And usually they're busy. So it's like, it's really hard to like track someone down and just be like, hey, I'm interested in interviewing them. It does happen from time to time if they're like, hey, like I would love to do this little fun thing with them. Sometimes they do that. And I'm just talking about all actors in general, not necessarily Star Wars. But a lot of times when I end up interviewing somebody about Star Wars, if it's outside of the normal time frame, they tend to be promoting something else. So I just talked to like Alan Tudyk's doing the show called Resident Alien on Sci-Fi. Right. And, you know, he knows it's coming. I'm like, hi, I have a Star Wars set too. I have to ask you about K2. Like it's just part of who I am. I cannot help myself. They know it's coming. They all roll with it. But a lot of times when you see those random like interview bites, they're promoting else. That's usually how I approach it. Is I'm just like, okay, this person has a movie coming out. I would love to talk to them about A, B, and C plus the thing they're in. Would they be interested? Yeah. And that's how I usually approach it.
Yeah. And by the way, your Tudyk interview was brilliant. The way you kind of, I think you went down the right path. I think they're hiding something.
There's when I called him a liar to his face. Yeah.
I wasn't gonna go there, but yes, absolutely, that was great.
You know, I used to try to take this journalistic approach where I would like write my questions in a certain way, and then I realized eventually that people are wondering the same exact things that I'm wondering, so I'm just gonna say what I want to say.
Well, and again, there's something interesting about even just that approach we were talking a little bit before we went on about how even like this sort of format here, right? Two boxes is like, that's kind of informalized things to a degree, right? I mean, it's a little bit different when you're sitting in that director's chair and they're in the director's chair and the poster's behind them. And now you're on your couch and you're chatting with Ewan McGregor or whoever you happen to be talking to. And
I agree with you. It's totally different because I think, you know, I say this a lot, but those press junkets, and you've been to them, they're set up like interrogation rooms. They are, they're two chairs facing directly across from each other, which is like, just from like a social person that's socializing, it's just like weird energy. And then there's two lights that are just beaming down on you. And then there's also what people don't see is there's a ton of people around the room watching you, counting down your time, hope and you know. And I think there's also this added element of the posters and stuff being behind you where you kind of feel like, I do want to ask about a couple other things, but I gotta mostly be over here in this movie space. So I think it makes everything a lot more casual. People are in their homes. You know, people have like dogs throwing up in the background, which has happened to me more times than I could count. And yeah, it makes everything's a lot different. There's a lot of benefits to being in person. I think like the energy can be a little better in person sometimes if they're like in studio. But I think as far as like people are a lot more accessible in this Zoom virtual format.
You kind of forget where you are. You're just like, oh, so it's just a regular old conversation.
Yeah. And you tend to have more time.
Yeah. What's your thoughts on where movies are headed? What's going to happen when, and well, not if, because it looks like they're trying to get theaters back open, but how do you think the movie going experience is going to change?
Yeah. It's really interesting because being like film Twitter adjacent, like I want to go back to the movies. We all want to go back to the movies. We love it. But there is a certain element of like having them available on streaming that is kind of lovely, right? Yeah. Like, because there's certain movies that I would probably never go to the movies to see. And I'm an AMC A-lister, so I was going a ton to the movies because you have, I forget what it was. You can go like four times a week or something if you want. Right. Amazing. But there are certain movies, like I probably wouldn't have gone to the movies to see Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar, but I watched it over the weekend and now I'm obsessed with it. So I think there is a level of movies that are kind of going like tandem streaming theaters that I really enjoy. I don't know if they'll keep it up though, because the more I read about the Warner Brothers HBO Max situation, the more I understand why the filmmakers are upset about it. Because they obviously didn't sign up for a streaming movie. They signed up for the theater experience. So they feel like they're getting gypped. But I feel like if you know it's going to streaming going in,
Yeah. I believe here, not that you asked, but I will give you I believe what's going to happen.
No, let's chat.
Let's have a conversation. Hey, you're on your couch. This is a Zoom. Nobody cares. It's just us. Just you and me. But I think it's going to evolve so that it's going to be both. And I think you're going to pay a little. I mean, you're already paying a premium to go to the theaters. Like if I take my two kids to go see some horrible movie that I'm just disturbed to even be going to go see something. Like, why am I spending? I'll spend $60, $80 between food and tickets and things versus staying at home and watching that same questionable children's movie that I can't believe I'm paying full price for. However, right. I do think you're going to get to a point where like a Star Wars movie or any tentpole movie, I may want to watch it at home. I might have wanted to watch Wonder Woman 84 at home to get that sort of familiarity or intimacy of the movie. And I might've gone to see it also in the theater for the theater experience. And so I think there's going to be an evolution of a hybrid of both because people are also going to get used to doing it this way.
Yeah. And I agree with you with like, I hadn't thought about like the family perspective of it is like, you're paying so much money. The more kids you have, the more money that you're paying. Yeah. And also, I saw Frozen 2 in theaters, whenever that was that last year. Awful experience. Awful experience. There was like four field trips in there or something. It was just.
Yeah, it's rough when and again like even certain times like certain movies that when they come out, I'd rather just kind of put them on the big TV in the family room and watch it there and not have to worry about everything else that's going on, or put the kids to bed and now like I can just. This is my own movie theater, but I do love that, I talk about it all the time on the show here. My buddy across the street who, whenever a major Marvel or Star Wars or DC movie came out, we would go on that Thursday night. We'd leave the kids home. Mm-hmm. We'd go, we'd do our thing. We'd have a beer. We'd watch the movie. We'd have that event. And there's something just so great about that I don't think people want to give up, as comfortable as it is to watch a movie at home. I think it's there's certainly something to it, and I think it could grow into a different an evolution of the industry from that.
Right. Like I couldn't imagine being at home watching Avengers Endgame and seeing like that portal moment, because it wouldn't have been as effective as it was in the theater when everyone is like, that's one of the best theater moments I've ever had.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, again, I totally agree. Like if you're sitting there on your couch, you'd be like, yeah, that's kind of, I mean, I always think back, the early example I use is when around the time you're talking about when the Star Wars movies came back into the theaters. I remember watching, my dad took me when I was seven. I took my dad in 1997 to New York City for an event for Star Wars Galaxy. And it was great to be in the theater because the lines that you forget, like I'll never forget the "curse my metal body, they're dying." Everybody in the theater starts laughing hysterically. But meanwhile, for the last 20 years, it was just kind of, I remember that line. But right. To be in that theater experience and to take that all in, you're right, Avengers would not work the same at all. I guess it's kind of good that Zack Snyder's Justice League has sort of already been out. I don't know. I mean, that's a different thing altogether, because that was used as a way to sell HBO Max to people, I think.
Right, but he's not getting paid for that. That's just like him wanting to do that.
Oh yeah, I did not realize that.
Yeah, I guess that came out in the Vanity Fair article that Anthony Breznican did, I believe. I don't know if he gets like money after the fact, but yeah, he's like not getting paid for that.
Interesting. But it's speaking of the Zack Snyder thing and talking about fan expectations, I hesitate to go into Star Wars social media because it is such some people call it a hellscape, but some people, I mean, there's a lot of real positivity, but there's a lot of challenge that a lot of people calling for things like, what are they saying? They're going to retcon the sequels, or they're going to kill the sequels and redo them, which is ridiculous. But how much of the sort of the Zack Snyder win do you think can be attributed to this sort of fan expectation?
I do think it's like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I know enough about it to like totally dive into it, because I'm not like totally in that fandom.
Right.
But sure. I do think that it is because of them, and it seems like he attributes it to them. Mm-hmm. So I do think that's the reason. Yeah. It's like him like being like, yeah, I want to finish this for me, but also for you guys who have been like loyal this entire time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to watch it.
Oh yeah. I was not a huge fan of the original version, but I have HBO Max. Well, I'm going to watch it that day.
Yeah. That, right. The other version, I went to the premiere. So that's okay. Like that's one of those things where like you go and you see it and everyone's screaming and you're like, oh, this is a good time.
Right. Yeah. Right. The movie theater experience can sometimes make a not so great movie better. Like I watched Batman vs. Superman at home at like 8 o'clock in the evening on a Saturday night. And I was overanalyzing it because I wasn't in that theater moment.
I saw it on a plane for the first time, which is what every filmmaker wants to hear. Yeah.
They definitely want to know you saw it that way. Absolutely.
I watched it on a plane and I remember thinking the same thing. I was like kind of picking it apart. And then I was like, oh, what am I doing?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what they're doing. Now, Star Wars, as a story, what are your thoughts on delivering so much of the story as it appears we're going to get over the next couple of years through streaming services?
I like it a lot. I mean, I think when you think about the anthology films that I don't think are going to exist anymore, the Star Wars stories, right. You know, they tried it with Rogue One. They tried it with Solo. I love Rogue One a lot. And I like Solo, but I think my biggest issue with Solo is they set up a lot that I feel like we're never going to get.
Yeah.
But with Rogue One, I felt like, oh man, this is a shame because I love so many of these characters so much. I would have preferred to spend more time with them. And I think it would have worked better as a series than it is than it did a movie.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, 100%. I think also it kind of is almost more true to Lucas's vision of sort of serializing it and you know, I think Disney's doing such a great job with between the Star Wars stuff and WandaVision and going with that week to week. Now, are you a binger or are you a week to week? Which was your preference?
I love week to week. I think it's so much fun. I mean, they do it with Mando. They're doing it with WandaVision. It's so much fun to like speculate, do theories, talk to your friends about it. And especially just from a coverage standpoint, it's way easier when it's week to week, because when, you know, Netflix or whatever, any other streaming service does like the binge dump,
right?
It's really hard to figure out how to cover it because it's pretty much over after the weekend. I mean, right. Like Stranger Things, for example, they release it all at once, right? I think so.
Yep,
and that's one where people talk about it like Friday through the next Friday, and then you don't hear about it anymore. No one talks about it. So I think it just benefits to do week to week for everybody because you know, we kind of figured out this like fan spoiler situation, how we'd handle it. We're like, okay, we don't say anything on Friday. We are good to go on by Monday. Monday, you're fine. Tag your spoilers. Like that's
it is funny how the social media community was kind of like, okay, we're all cool with Mondays. Mondays we can do it. Okay,
yeah, we got to figure this out, guys.
That, now, from a coverage standpoint, do you use the same rules? You're kind of like, hey, we're gonna try to, but you want to get ahead of it, or?
Yeah. Well, for Mandalorian, for example, like I did a Katie Sackhoff interview. That was like the one that I did this season, because they didn't do like any press for season two. They kind of had, and I'm sure you like you all observed it, they had like one actor and then they would pair them with like one outlet each week. Mm-hmm. So I did a Katie Sackhoff interview, but it was like Friday, and I was like, okay, I will post this on Monday morning, like first thing, get it up. But that was mainly because I wanted to finesse it and add all the B-roll and all the assets and make it nice. But if it had happened any sooner, I probably would have put it up on Friday and just tagged the hell out of it. Like, spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. I don't know though, because that one's pretty obvious. I probably would have waited till Monday for that one. I don't want to get yelled at.
Why is this?
Who knows?
It's interesting too. So were you, as a Star Wars fan, were you a big fan of the animated series?
I watched those later, pretty much. Yeah. I remember I tried a couple times in college. I tried a couple times. I've tried a few times. And then it wasn't until it was like around mid-Rebels. Like I was like, okay, you know what? I want to get on the Rebels train. And now I'm going to go on the Clone Wars train. And yeah, I went back and like watched it all.
Yeah, yeah. And the introduction of those, some of those animated characters into television. I mean, you had the opportunity. What I love was when, as I was researching, you did this interview with Rosario Dawson back in, what was it, 2019?
Oh, yeah. Or yeah. It was 18 or 19.
And she was, I wonder if she, where she was in the process. Do you, because she was very much like, I'd love to do it. If they call me, I'll do it. But it was, I don't know if she was UNing us or if she was.
I think she knew 100%. Cause when I had a couple of these where I've asked some questions and then I go back and watch it and I'm like, and this one, she brought it up by herself. I was like, when are we going to get, cause I was like, oh, she's done like every franchise that exists. And I was like, when are you going to do Star Wars? And she was like, oh my gosh, the fans have been pushing me for me to play Ahsoka Tano for a while now, blah, blah, blah. And she said it like, to the point where I was like, oh, it almost felt like, I don't know if she was like creating buzz around it, trying to get people excited for the possibility of this casting. But I felt like she knew.
Yeah. Yeah. And as a fan and not, I know you have talked to these people, but how do you feel the Rosario Ahsoka fits with the Rebels and Clone Wars?
So, like, how do I feel about like her look versus
like
what
the connection? Yeah, like as far as capturing.
A lot of people were talking about the what do we call them? The Leeku, the tendrils. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm inclined to agree. They seem a little short, and they're like a little bendy. But other than that, you know, I don't know. Her debut, the debut of her was so good with like the white sabers that I didn't really care. That's more like with a lot of the Mandalorian, I'm like, if I have to pick something to pick on, this is what I'm gonna say. Yeah. But I thought it looked really good.
I think that's one of the fun things about Mandalorian is and you were saying before, you sort of dunk on Star Wars because you're a fan. And I love that perspective because I haven't thought of it that way, but I'm the same, like you nitpick because you want to see things a certain way. And you can like, I remember saying when the series first came out, I was like, you know, some of the acting feels kind of like 1970s chips, but it's fine because it's great. And it's Star Wars, but it's Star Wars, and that's what we're going for. And yeah, so the costume may not be exactly what you expected, but it's Star Wars. It's not, you know, the Bible. It's not world hunger. It's not current
affairs. I have some thoughts on the Bible now.
Let's dig into that.
Well, the main character kind of changes in the second half. It's, you know, it's funny because there's so much of it. There's so much Star Wars now. It's just not all going to be perfect. Right. We love it. We love it and all its flaws. And it's silly. It's silly space movie.
I 100%. And so sort of back to that social media danger zone. But like that's what drives me the most insane. And as somebody who's a fan and somebody who's pulling information and bringing it
very
to people,
online.
Yeah. How do you respond? And I obviously, you have to be very mindful of the conversations you decide to get involved in online.
Yeah.
But I mean, as a fan, how does it feel to look at, you know, sort of sometimes the negativity, and again, most of us try to be positive and it's a very small percentage, but it's a loud percentage. How do you feel about that?
I don't know about you, but I have so much anxiety that to even sometimes I like look at it and it depends on what it is. You know, sometimes there's like actual causes that the fans are talking about or actual things that like should be addressed or should be talked about. But when it's just like absolute nonsense, I'm like, oh my God, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to turn my phone off and not look at this and just do me. Because it can like consume you in a way. And sometimes I feel like social media is not it's not real life. It's like not a reflection of real life. And I feel like sometimes you just gotta log off for a hot minute. That's how I feel. I don't know.
No, I think that's a safe way to go. And especially because, I mean, it's so easy to, I just was saying to a friend of mine today, like Twitter is not a place to have a nuanced conversation.
No.
You can't say, I disagree with this, but I agree with that in a way that will allow you to explain it and have a good, like you catch that first tweet and this first 280 characters are like, well, that person obviously likes this or doesn't like that or has this opinion. And you get like, but
it's
wait,
literally nothing like,
is black and white, right?
Yeah. You tweet like, oh, I had a banana this morning. I love bananas. And people will be like, so you don't like oranges? Like, did I say that I didn't like oranges? Right. Are you implying that I don't like oranges? And then now we're all fighting about oranges for the rest of the day.
Right. It becomes, it could, and to your point, that's when you have to walk away because it just consumes you.
And I'm like, this isn't, this isn't real. I gotta go.
Well, we're glad you're doing what you do. Now, we have a portion of the show that is our 10 question segments, how we close every show. And if you're up for it, I'd like to ask you all 10 questions.
Let's play. Let's do it.
Get ready.
Okay. For what?
There you go. That same production quality from the beginning. We bring it to you here for the 10 question section. So,
love it.
As I tell all my guests, I won't judge you, but the people watching might. So there's no pressure.
Go for it.
Question number one. What is your favorite Star Wars movie, TV show, or book?
Okay. I'm probably going to give like three answers to everything. So
no problem.
My favorite movie is A New Hope, Star Wars, the first one. It introduced me to the whole franchise. I fell in love with it. It also has like just perfect from start to finish, in my opinion. But then also I have to say The Mandalorian, because I have such a special place in my heart for it, because I've just been able to, career-wise, that's the one that I feel like is like really done a lot for me.
Right.
I guess. Okay. I hate saying that. But yeah, I feel like it's like, it's the one that I like connect to the most, like career-wise, and of just like, I don't know. I love it. I love everyone involved.
And it's a fun story. I thought
it was so fun.
What do you think of the name Grogu? Were you ready for that? Were you ready for the name?
It kind of sounds similar to Goku, which threw me off at first, but it really fits him. I remember when they were like, oh, he has a name. I was like, I'm never going to stop calling him Baby Yoda. Then I was like, oh, Grogu's kind of cute. I'll go with it.
Yeah, it kind of works, right? Absolutely. Cool. All right. So the second question is, what Star Wars planet would you most like to visit?
Okay. Let's assume that the planet that I am living on or visiting is not blown up or not being attacked.
Sure.
Yes, I want to go to Scarif. I want to go to a beach planet. I want to go on vacation there. Maybe Naboo for some parties and clubs, but I think Scarif has like some nice, you know, island vibes.
I feel like you could get a good drink on Scarif.
I think like so too. I just watched Barb and Star. I want like a blended drink on the beach.
That's great. Excellent. Now you're, of course, assuming no walkers, no Imperial Citadel.
Yeah. Assuming it's not going to blow up.
Okay. Totally fair. Third question. And it's on your finger, but would you consider yourself a rebel or an Imperial?
Yeah. We're going rebel.
That is the best. Now, okay. You mentioned the tattoo and I neglected to ask you, how far before you interviewed Favreau did you get that? Like, when did you get that? What's the story behind the tattoo?
I think I got this tattoo in like 2017. I'm trying to think. I had wanted it forever and I'd always talked about it and I was like, I'm gonna get it. And I always kind of thought about where I wanted it in my body, but I would always at work like draw it on my finger, you know, like a crazy person. I would always just draw it on my finger because I was like I would try
high
to
school
like
girl, right?
Yeah, like Ash and the Rebel Alliance. No, I would always do it because I was like, oh, I want to see how it looks. And like, I want to see if I could actually like live my life with this on my finger. Because and when you go to the tattoo shop, they try to talk you out of finger tattoos all the time. They're like, do not do this. You know, it's going to run. And we don't like to do that for people's first tattoos. And so I went in there. One of my friends one day was like, you've been talking about this for years. He called me at like 10 o'clock in the morning. He's like, you've been talking about this for years. I'm picking you up. We're going to get it and I'm paying for it. And I was like, oh. I don't know how I'm going to get out of this. So I went and I did it. And I remember thinking, it's my only tattoo. And I was like, this is going to feel like such a big deal. It's going to feel like such a big moment. I don't know if you have any tattoos. Did not feel like a big deal.
No.
Did not care. Afterwards, I was like, okay, that's there. Whatever. And yeah, now I'm married. Now I'm married to the Rebel Alliance.
Married to the Rebel. So your answer is Rebel. I love the, when you were doing the interview with the Rise of Skywalker cast and Oscar
just Oscar Isaac noticed it.
he's like, wait a second, right? He was like Favreau in that he didn't believe it was real, did he?
It's weird too, because like no one ever notices it unless I'm like really pointing it out, and that I was just like talking, and I was like, what is he looking at? And he was like. Him and Daisy were both like, I was looking at that. What is that?
I think you should have taken Daisy to go get one as soon as you were done with that interview.
Would love to.
Yeah, next time. You'll do it next time.
Yeah.
For episode 10, I suppose. All right. next question. What's your favorite Star Wars sound effect?
I think I feel like nothing beats like a lightsaber lighting up. And also like specifically Kylo Ren's lightsaber, because it sounds so cool.
Yeah.
But also, you know, the TIE fighter sound is pretty cool because it's so recognizable. You're just like, I don't know. I can't do it. I can't make sounds. It's not my career.
I'm not gonna make you do that.
Anything with the electric-y sounds I love. Like the beginning of Force Awakens when Kylo freezes the blaster thing and it's just like sitting there. That's a cool sound.
That's a cool set. I like that one. That's a good one. And that's the amazing thing about like they in Force Awakens, Kylo Ren was so perfectly put together from the way he looked to the sound effects to the I remember personally. I was like, the voice just feels weird to me. And like when you heard anything and the way Poe just like right off the bat puts us all at ease. Like I can't understand you because of the. And we're all like, oh, okay, good. It's
disarming there too.
It's so great.
And for I feel like it's almost for like the rest of the thing, you're kind of like, oh, like Kylo's like, he's not that menacing anymore because Poe just like ruined it.
right. Yeah. That was so awesome. Cool. All right. So the fifth question is who's your favorite Star Wars droid?
Ooh, it's anyone who is very sarcastic and dry with their personality. So like, I love IG-88, I love K2, and I love L3. I think of the K2 is probably the best though.
Yeah. Anybody who can slap somebody and say there's another one where that came from is just that's one of my favorite lines from.
You know, he did that. He improv that. Diego did not know that was coming.
I was not completely aware of that. No.
When you go back and watch it, Diego does this. He's like kind of like going like this and being like, and he's clear. He's like cracking up.
Alan Tudyk was so great, and that's why he needs to come back for Cassian. We need him back. Then that has to happen. I think he's going to be. Here's my theory. He is going to be playing a different K2 droid. But he's going to be there. He's going to be there somewhere. He's going to be a part of it. Just my own thing. I don't know. I'm just nerding out, just waiting for something. As you do when you have a Star Wars podcast, you nerd out about it.
Yeah, that's what we're supposed to do. Speculate.
Correct. Right. That's part of the business. Okay. So if you could own any starship or vehicle from Star Wars, what would it be?
Okay. This one's so hard. I kind of want the Gungan submarine thing that looks like a manta ray, but yes. I don't know how often I would use that. And if I'm in the Star Wars universe, I'm going to get eaten by a bigger fish because there's always a bigger fish. Do I have this like with me? I'm in Santa Monica. Do I have my vehicle here?
Yeah, that's a good question. First of all, I'm going to take the Falcon off the table because I've done this 100 and something times and everybody always ends up with the Falcon. So taking the Falcon off the table.
I don't want that piece of junk.
Well, good. So for you, it doesn't make any difference. But yeah, let's say you have it in Santa Monica. You need to find it. You need to find a home for it, perhaps.
Okay, in this case, I want the submarine.
I want the
manta ray looking submarine.
Bongo, I think is what they call
the bongo. That's like my. I could never do Star Wars trivia because I don't know the name of any ship ever, and I will learn it. I cannot retain it. It just in one ear and out the other. I also like the wheel bike that I think General Grievous has.
Oh yes,
that was the wheelie bike.
I don't
know the
name of that. I'm sure there's a name for it, but I.
And then the Naboo starship, very sexy, sleek, beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But assuming I'm in Santa Monica, I gotta go with my submarine.
Yeah, it's nice to have. You take it to parties. You can. Yeah. Nobody has said in 103 episodes. Nobody has said. The bongo. And by the way, if it makes you feel any better, I don't know why I can remember all these things. Like I can probably recite word for word A New Hope just, in fact, like every now and then my kids are like, all right, we're going to turn the volume down and we're going to make you do this. I'm like, I feel wrong about it. But yeah, so I can't remember my PIN when I go to the ATM. I stand there and I'm like, what is it? But I can tell you how many legs are on a probe droid and I don't know why. So
anything that's like not explicitly stated in the movies, it just, I can't do it. I'm the same way though. I put on Phantom Menace recently and I felt like I hadn't watched it in a while. And I was like, I don't remember certain parts. No, I have it memorized. I have the whole movie memorized. I know it word for word.
It's crazy how that stuff occupies parts of your brain. Was Phantom Menace your favorite prequel?
Yeah, I think it still is. I don't know. I think it's like, it's like kind of the most funny. I don't know if that's intentional, but it makes me laugh. but then it also has some of the best moments on the Duel of Fates.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really like that one. Probably for sentimental reasons, but I really like that one a lot.
Yeah. It's funny because I, as I said, I was at the New York premiere of that, and I remember walking out and I was like, I don't know how I felt about that. And now, and for years, I used to, like you were saying, when you were in college, for years, I was like, yeah, Phantom Menace, that was garbage. The prequels, they were no good. I want to move on. And now I'm just like, I will stop and I will watch, I'll stop everything and be like, oh, Phantom Menace is on and I'll watch it and I'll love it and I'll pick up things. And it's just, it's funny how 20 years a film like that can really age.
It appreciates the value.
Yeah.
We talked about the best sound. I got to go back. Yeah. The pod racing scene has the best sounds.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that because when I was talking to my best friend, when I was growing up, my best friend, we were big Star Wars fans, so much so that we made a Super 8 version of some of the film, some of the scenes, because we were just totally, like, we literally scratched the laser belts on the film. It did not look great, but we were committed. But so I had gone to the premiere. He wasn't there. I came home. We were having dinner and he was like, so what did you think of Phantom Menace? Am I going to love it? I was like, the pod racing had some really awesome sound effects. And that was like, that was what I took with me from my first viewing of The Phantom Menace. So yeah. So Bulba's pod is maybe one of my favorite Star Wars sounds.
Sebulba.
We need more Sebulba, by the way. Can we get him maybe in the Obi-Wan series? Can we get him?
What happened to him?
He survived. I think I'm pretty sure he survived the pod race.
Yeah. Cause he was just like, oh, rats. But then did he appear in anything else?
I don't.
He had just shown up in something.
I'm sure it's probably a comic book somewhere that I haven't. That comic book.
If you know, let us know in the comments below.
Yes, yeah, so let's look in the. Let's see here. I'm sure somebody would. will let us know at some point. Okay, while we wait for somebody to tell us if Sebulba survived. Question number 7 is: what is your favorite Star Wars collectible that you own? Doesn't have to be necessarily something you can buy, but something that you have that's Star Wars that's your favorite thing.
Can I get up for a second?
Sure.
I gotta go. Bye. Don't leave everybody.
All right. Does anybody in the comments know if Sebulba did anything after the pod race? I'm watching. I'm watching and waiting to see if there's anything in there. She's back.
I didn't go far. Okay. I already talked about it, but, you know, like a dork, I framed my coin.
Oh, there you go.
And it's just my favorite.
That's amazing.
And it's so cool.
That's so awesome. And it's funny because I remember somebody had shown the backside of that with the mud horn on it before we knew what it was all about. And it's just it's not just in the show, in that episode. It's him now.
Yeah. I should have given that more thought at the time, but I was too excited. I was like, yes.
That is, yeah, that's the greatest thing.
I love that. I'm pretty much, I'm like kind of a minimalist. I don't have a lot of stuff.
You don't have a wall full of helmets like this. You don't.
I have a shelf that's like a couple, like it's like some books and like some things that like have just been gifted to me. But overall, I don't really keep stuff. So this one's never going away.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great.
Oh, wait. Okay. We have a Sebulba answer.
Oh, we do.
David. Sebulba rebuilt his pod racer or bought a new one of the same model and kept on racing on the intergalactic conflict known as the Clone Wars. Did he show up in Clone Wars? I don't remember. Sometime after the war's beginning, posters could be found advertising showdown between Sebulba and the previously luckless Ben Guadagneros, who are now considered to be the... Oh, is he? He's on Coruscant, Attack of the Clones?
I guess he is. Interesting. Wait. One such poster was owned by Cibola's old nemesis, Anakin. He's pulling up all of the Wikipedia thing
here. This is the type of stuff I don't notice when it happens. I'm like, oh.
Well, he's saying, I'm totally taking this from Wikipedia. Well, thank you, David.
It's okay. That's where I would go as well.
that's why they have Wikipedia. So, all right. So, yeah. So we could, we might see him in Kenobi. It'd be great if he went back for another, you know, pod race or something. What do you think? Since you picked it as the thing you wanted to see the most, how much time do you think we're going to spend on Tatooine on that show? Do you think he's going to like get up and leave and be like, I'll be back. I hope nothing happens to the kid. Where do you want the story? Maybe better is where do you want the story to go?
It kind of seems like the whole sitch is like, I feel like he doesn't really leave that much, but it seems like he's maybe not like the best at like looking over Luke. Right. Because he barely changes his name. He's like, I got to pick another name for my new identity. Should I switch from Obi-Wan to Old Ben Kenobi? Not even change my last name. And so I think people keep coming for him, like Inquisitors and stuff, to go after Luke. And he's got to like fend them off the whole time. And I guess Vader's coming at some point.
Yeah. I love that. It's like, all right, I'll tell you what, Yoda, I'll keep an eye on this kid. I'm going to go back to where his dad was born because that's probably a good place to go. He'll never look for him there. And I don't really want to change my name. I'm kind of committed to the Kenobi thing. And
I'm going to live next door. It's like in the Family Guy Blue Harvest special or whatever. They're like, Obi-Wan Kenobi. I wonder if he means old Obi-Wan Kenobi.
So funny. Like I had my fan theories back in before Phantom Menace came out. I was like, oh, Obi-Wan. So he must have been a clone. And that was, which I still think is a great theory, but you know, obviously too late for that. That's very, yeah, we're going to see him like just making mistakes all the time. Like kind of, it's going to be like six episodes of him just kind of like walking by, just covering his face as he walks by.
He's at the cantina putting down his credit card and it just says Obi-Wan Kenobi. And he's like, crap, damn. I gotta stop doing that.
Keep giving myself away. That's fantastic. That's what it's gonna be. It's gonna be six episodes of him sitting at the bar telling jokes, and then like totally, he's gonna be totally dunking on Anakin, and that's why we're gonna see Hayden, because he's gonna be telling stories about Anakin just like doing stupid things, and he's gonna be the hero of the.
I wonder that wars. Because at this point, you know, our baby boy Anakin is burnt to a crisp. So right. Am I going to see Anakin? Am I going to see Hayden Christensen's beautiful locks? Am I going to see his beautiful face? I need it.
What I would love, if give me one scene of Ewan McGregor in his Clone Wars animated series, white armor. Mm-hmm. And the clip, I'll be all in for that with Anakin and his black armor thing going on there. That's fantastic. I would love to see that.
Yeah, he's got to leave at a couple points, right? A couple crossovers with some other characters. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, either way, it's going to be awesome. I'm excited. Yeah. But it's one of those series that I was like, do we need it, though? Do we? And now I'm like, I need it now. I need it right now. And everything, you know, somebody was saying that, you know, Filoni has never really given us a show that's about what it's called, right? Rebels is a Jedi story. Clone Wars, sure, it's the Clone Wars, but it's this great story, not even about Anakin and Obi-Wan so much as Ahsoka and the individual clones. So who knows what we're actually, I mean, Mandalorian was a lone wolf and cub, essentially. So,
right.
All right. So question number 8, if you could be any Star Wars character, who would you be and why?
I would be Grogu because all he does is eat until he throws up and falls asleep. And I want to be carried around by a big, strong Mandalorian played by Pedro Pascal for several months. And then I will go live with Luke. Who doesn't want that life?
Sounds pretty good. I mean, honestly, it's that's great. All right. So Grogu for Ash Crossing. Got it. Yep, Writing it down. All right. What's your favorite Star Wars moment?
Mine's probably the most cliche one. I feel like a lot of people are probably, you've done 103 episodes. I bet 100 of them have said the twin suns, the binary sunset, but it's my favorite. It's beautiful. The score, the theme, all of it. And it just says so much without Luke not saying a single word. And then just paired with us seeing the twin suns in The Last Jedi, or the twin sunset. And it just, it's the start and end of Luke's story. It's so emotional for so many reasons.
Yeah.
I love that scene.
It is. I mean, it's when you think of Star Wars, I guess that's what you think of. You think,
yeah,
of
and for good one. Reason.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. And the amazing thing is, this is me, like, if I had my glasses on, I'd be pushing them up. I mean, it's that wasn't the original score that was underneath that scene. It was actually written a little bit differently. And he went back and rewrote the score for that section. But and that would have changed everything. And any other music under that would have changed absolutely everything. So
I agree.
That is a fantastic Star Wars moment. All right. Question number 10, the final question is, what is your go-to Star Wars quote?
Ooh, mine is do or do not. There is no try, because that is kind of how I live my life. Cause you know, I always have this, I can't do this. I shouldn't do this. Blah, blah, blah. No, I'm going to do it. So I live my life by a Yoda quote, you know, I have it on a bracelet somewhere. Somebody got me a bracelet with it, like inscribed on the inside. And I love it. It's a good life quote.
It's a good way to go about things, right? And it's funny because it's also, you know, some people, it's like a really kind of a Zen way to do it. It's not saying not to try. It's saying, like, if you're going to do it, just do it, right? Just don't half-ass it, right?
I have an old boss that said, if you're going to fail, fail spectacularly. And I totally agree with that. I mean, it's, you know, obviously having a job where you do everything just in public is great for that. Super fun if you mess it up, but it's right. Like, you know, might as well do it and fail than not do it at all, you know?
That's fantastic. Well, Ash, thank you so much for spending the last hour with us talking Star Wars and geeking out. It was great to hear your story. Where can people follow you online and keep up with what you're doing?
Oh, the absolute best place is twitter.com. You can always yell at me about my opinions there. If I made one that you didn't like, let me know. It's at Ash Crossan, and I always like pin what I'm working on there, post what I'm working on. So feel free to follow me on there if you have a Twitter. And if you don't, SOL, I guess. Wait, I have something to say. I hope this isn't inappropriate.
No, you know what? The more inappropriate, the better, actually. Is kind
good.
Of the
way, so I've been thinking through this interview. I think that you are a certified daddy.
Who is me?
You, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So I like to denote people as daddies from time to time. Okay. And I believe that you are a certified daddy. Like Pedro Pascal is a daddy. Like, right. You know, yeah, certified daddy.
All right.
You just you have the energy.
All right. Well, I that is going to be pinned on my Twitter now.
Yes.
That Ash Crossan, certified daddy.
Yes. It's a good thing. It's a great thing.
Well, it's not, you know, I don't have any tattoos, but maybe now that will be the tattoo that I get.
Certified daddy.
Well, that made my week, which is awesome. So, but thank you so. I say this to every guest, but this time I mean it. I'd love to have you back on sometimes. So,
yes.
Let's do it. Yes. So this was great. Well, thank you so much. And we will be following you and keeping up with Star Wars on Entertainment Tonight with Ash Crossan. Thanks for hanging out.
Thanks, everyone.
Well, that wraps it up for this episode of Around the Galaxy. Thanks to our guests, and thank you for hanging out. If you had fun, please like, subscribe, and share. If you really liked it, please feel free to head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/beyondtheblastdoors. You can also find that link on beyondtheblastdoors.com, where you can keep up with this show and all the shows on the Beyond the Blast Doors network, as well as find a link to our merch store. And if you use the code ATGCAST, you'll get 10% off your order. So until next time, this has been Pete Fletcher, and we'll see you for our next trip around the Galaxy.
Around the Galaxy is copyright 2021 Pete and Seat Studios. Our music is brought to us by the band Silver Colored Knob, whose music can be found on Apple iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find music.